Welcome to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns. Real people, real voices, real lives. Discussing mental health, addiction and disability in the community. Your weekly window to the real world. Welcome to Take It From Us.
The construction industry in New Zealand can create a very challenging working environment. Time pressures, seasonal pressures, budgetary pressures are driving stress levels very high across most businesses in Aotearoa. Sadly, the rate of suicide is extremely high. So how can we get our workers, predominantly men, to be vulnerable enough to share their worries, their fears, and offload some of that stress? Well, Mates in Construction has one simple aim: to reduce the number of lives lost to suicide in the construction industry. Leading the charge is Slade McFarlane, Hauora Framework and Engagement Manager for Mates. Slade has been in the industry for donkey's years. He's seen firsthand the repeated struggles many men have at work and the impact that is having on their private lives at home. Slade also had a pretty decent rugby career and talks about the game being his outlet for all the stress in his life. Please be advised, this episode of Take It From Us deals with the issue of suicide. Here's Slade McFarland on what's top of mind for him heading into the busiest time of the year. How have you been? What's been going on?
Yeah, been good. I mean, obviously, I've come back to the role of mostly being back in Mates. I went and had a bit of a hiatus for about 14 months because, to be honest, and you know, the mental well-being game, it can burn you out, you know. But, you know, I think it's just understanding how to put things in place to actually know when the stress is on and actually dealing with it because, you know, being in this space, you know, unless you're actually exercising what you're preaching, you're in big trouble. You know, you can find yourself on the other end of it and being on the pile of everybody else that is stressing out.
Right. So you're talking about, even in your role with Mates in Construction, having to really educate and empathise and be there for a lot of people across the construction industry. If you're not looking after yourself, you're not winning.
No, you're not winning at all. I think you end up being quite a hypocrite, really, because you're telling all these people what they should be doing, but if you're not following that same mantra, you're going to find yourself in trouble further down the line because we're no different to anybody else. We're balancing family life with work life. But, you know, mostly this one is quite an emotional ride because you're dealing with other people as well and the trauma that they're kind of dealing with and trying to work through.
Yeah. So do you see it as a real responsibility? Part of your core role is to lead by example. Is that important to you?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the thing is that, you know, internally we had to put framework in, which I don't think Mates at the time had that kind of framework where we were looking after the workers that are doing this type of work, you know, making sure that they're doing their counselling or if it's supervision and doing the small things that we do for ourselves so that we you know, get up in the morning and do what we do. And it's those little things that we're trying to implement where, you know, if it means going to the gym, if it's going for a walk with nature, it's, you know, being in touch with friends. You know, we've got to exercise all these things if we are going to be transparent and very, authentic about how do we deliver that with our people that are out there. So, you know, we've got to live by it. You know, we've got things in, obviously, our training. You've got to be clear, direct and honest. And if you're not those three things, it becomes very difficult.
As I said in our introduction, you are the Hauora Framework and Engagement Manager. If we were to come and observe you at work, Slade, and follow you around for the day, what would we notice about what you do?
Well, I think the thing is we're very much like HR, but, you know, mostly from a mental well-being space is that I'm really checking up on our guys and making sure that, you know, they're following their procedures and obviously taking care of themselves. It's like, you know, looking at their training and making sure that, you know, what are the risks and hazards that come into our training. We're going to come up against people, obviously, that have a view on mostly suicide in itself. And sometimes the training we deliver, we make sure we create that safe space where we give them prior warning. You know, getting someone to be in the space where they're talking about suicide and suicide prevention can be quite damaging because the mere fact is that if they're not being prepared and understand what they're coming into, at least give them an opportunity as an out. That they got, you know, like, oh, man, this is too heavy or this is too close to the bone for me or, you know, because certain people within our industry have been impacted by suicide. But it's just our day-to-day connecting in with these guys, making sure we kind of have a routine where we actually catch up for a coffee, just taking them aside, just seeing what that looks like for themselves personally and just really just being very clear that making sure that they're, you know, outside of work, they're doing all the little things, reconnecting with their families and, you know, making sure they're, you know, they're level-headed when they come back into this line of work. So, and plus the other engagement side is really just touching base with other businesses, having these opportunities to sit in podcasts and just having a talk and then trying to get them to buy into the, you know, our program, which are the three levels of program, you know, just to, well, empower people really. And so they can walk away with skills that, you know, that they can take home with them and actually have these open conversations.
Well, if there would be a cohort of people out there that would truly understand what it's like to have a toolbox full of good stuff, it would be construction workers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So and that's the same analogy. You know, we have these physical toolboxes that we have that we can do our job, but we just don't have that mental toolbox that we can say, hey, you know, if I'm getting a bit of pressure, can I take a bit of a breather just to reset myself and, okay, I'm, you know, and just remind ourselves where we are with the work in progress, because the whole basis of it, you know, when we say health and safety, to be fair, our industry is safety heavy. If you talk about health, well, we're talking about eyes, ears, nose, you know, lungs and all that, but not talking about the brain and how's that operating.
Well, and now we're seeing people carrying the title of health, safety and well-being. So the health and safety people who, I think you're probably right, feels to me like they're safety-focused. That's what they're trained and that's what they know a lot about. Now we're throwing well-being onto their portfolio. And are these people actually adequately trained and equipped to deal with the trials and tribulations of so many people that they may encounter at work?
Yeah, and that can take a hell of a lot of strain on someone. Now their well-being, you know, you're not just taking on the health side of things, you're actually taking someone else's well-being, and then you're going to try and navigate how's the best way to try and not solve their problems, but to try and help them get through what that looks like. And some of our well-being people may be not well-equipped to deal with that, and some of them haven't been confronted when someone's not doing too well and mostly having suicide ideations and things like that. That becomes a whole hell, you know, what are we supposed to do here? So it's really trying to really open up that dialogue with mostly, especially in the mates and construction industry, that, you know, we've got the three levels of training, but we just really want to try and arm our people who have such good hearts and who want to help. Because we know that the ones they're out there, but the problem is that they're taking their problem home with them, and they're the ones that are worrying about them because they don't know how to actually fully engage or know how to actually alleviate that pressure. And good people always, you know, who are in that space, generally fall over too. So we just got to give them a good safeguard, but the tools to know how to look after themselves as well.
Let's have a look at the four pillars that underpin the values of Mates in Construction. And raising awareness is one of those pillars. Talk to me more about that.
Raising awareness, I think the things when we first started back in 2019, even for myself, the actual stats were actually shocking. you know, until you're actually confronted by the numbers of, you know, young and good men that are actually taking their lives. And that's from an age group, that, you know, from under 15 all the way through to 65 plus. You know, it was just staggering, you know. And obviously, you know, what we were trying to do at the time when we first started was we need to make them fully aware that this is something that is not talked about. It's not something that's been brought to the forefront. And we know that, you know, at the end of the day, 20% of it actually becomes underreported. So there is a great likelihood the numbers that we have each year, and it goes on a calendar year, those numbers could be higher. So, you know, it's really interesting from that point when we first started and the numbers that started to come out, that it was quite a big shock for a lot of our industry, especially being construction, being number one, taking over farming, because farming was number one. And, you know, just, you know, the, kind of the issues that we looked at. And obviously being born out of Australia, out of Brisbane, and that's the reason why they were invited here by industry for industry.
And I guess too with awareness, you're really encouraging mostly men, let's be honest, to engage in their own health and value it. Would that be right?
Yeah, and I think the thing was that we had to try and really articulate that they're not alone. You know, when like a question to ask a group of nearly 30 to 40 people, who here has been impacted by suicide? Holy smokes, you see all the hands that go up. Now, when that does, that in itself is effective because you see everybody else going, oh, I thought it was only me. But no, it's widespread. So we're just really making people fully aware that, you know, we're not alone in this. There's more people that are affected by this than we actually realise. And we just don't know who's sitting in our room with us that actually are travelling that journey at the moment.
Building strength on sites, is that delivering toolboxes, actually having open dialogue and literally providing information, education, knowledge, having Q&As with your workers?
Yeah, I mean, a male psyche, we're tough buggers as it is. When it comes to bloody trying to even talk, that's difficult in itself. I think we're slowly getting better. I think it was just when we first initially came into site that it was just being more of a presence on site, talking about these issues, and then it was just you're finding people that would have the courage to actually say, you know, can I have a chat, you know? Because as well as I do, it takes a hell of a lot of energy from a male to even ask for help at the best of times. And so we're just really trying to make them fully aware that I'm no different to you. But the thing is, the delivery of what that looks like for our training, it comes from our own experiences as well. We have a lot of mushy resources, which is like our Doc Lauren, who has our kind of research behind us that we can deliver that these are the stats of what that looks like in the mental capacity of how people are struggling, what that looks like, because, you know, what we're trying to raise the awareness is when your mate's not turning up to work on time, or, you know, he's looking different than what he was before, this is over a period of time, are we strong enough or have the strength to step in and say, mate, you're not looking all that well, you know, or do we just stand there and go, oh, he's just having a bad day, never mind, you know, let's get on with it, or here, have a beer, let's have a yarn, and they think that's enough. But it's really just to try and get our guys to really look after themselves a lot better and actually be fully aware of the changes of behaviour that are around us.
And that's been shown in fascinating human behaviour research that often we instinctively feel like something's wrong, something's not quite right, but the percentage of us that actually speak up and show our concern or our worry or raise something is actually quite small. So getting to your point, there's probably oodles and oodles of people out there worried or wondering, not sure, something's wrong with my mate. But then having the courage to actually speak up about it is key, eh?
100%. And so what we've seen is that, you know, we do have that natural gut feeling. Something's wrong. But we just, we second guess ourselves. And that's where we're really trying to encourage. If you feel something that's completely different, just ask. You know, just be that person that's right beside them. But it's what's happening on the other side is that we subconsciously give messages out saying, shit, we need help, man. But I just don't know how to actually ask you directly. We'd love people to just say, hey, you know what? I'm having a really bad day. I'm thinking of suicide. Or, you know, you think, and we'd love it to be that way. But it's not that way inclined. We send subconscious messages and do things that, you know, somebody will hopefully notice and then actually challenge it.
Whereas really, too, there's a responsibility for us to lean in to ask, hey, how are you going? Rather than waiting to hear, actually, they're doing poorly and, hey, man, I suspected that all along.
Yeah, and that's where we're looking at the evidence, and that's why it's over a time period. You know, you can see things that are changing. I know damn well the people who listen to us, they've got best mates. You've got a best mate, I've got a best mate. If we sat with them, I know that you would actually say something. So why isn't that we can't do that for our colleagues that we work with? Because, you know, 9 out of 10 times, we work with these people more often than we actually know some of our own family members. So we're really trying to embrace that where we can actually look after our mates and actually have these true, honest conversations. They're having discussions about mostly their sport, what they've been up to, but they would never go any deeper than that. So I call it surface talking. They just surf skipping along. Get our men to try and drop that facade and actually have real conversations. Like, man, I've been struggling this week. And you just wouldn't know that there might be another person in the same room that is mostly going through the same thing. And then all of a sudden you have the synergy where we're actually having open conversations so that we, you know, like you can walk away. And we already know that sometimes, you know, just having even a conversation can really help.
And that's what you also provide too as one of your pillars is connection to help. So that's bringing in service providers, it's bringing in experts, it's bringing in counsellors and people, therapists where the guys can offload. Is this being well utilised, do you think?
Yeah, we're getting a lot of phone. I mean, so we're very lucky that we have case managers behind us, and you know, they've got a fair workload on their plate too, you know, because they're dealing with their own clients and having these discussions. So we're kind of mostly very lucky in that space where if we, especially for our field officers, we're all trained as assist, so that's an applied suicide intervention skills train. So first aid to suicide. We can make sure you have these conversations with them, and then if it is quite serious, then we try and obviously push them on to our case managers, which specialise in actually getting the services. And it's not all about, you know, suicide. It's all about maybe sometimes about financial needs, and, you know, so it's been tough.
And also in the construction industry too, you've got plenty, this is my understanding, and you'll tell me if I'm wrong, but so many of the workers are taking on a lot of overtime work because they need the money for their families, but that comes at a massive cost because they're missing out on their families, and that's leading to whole sorts of another range of problems when you're doing 60, 70, 75-hour weeks.
100%, and so, you know, with mostly a lot of our migrant workers and guys that, you know, they've come from different countries to be here, you know, classic examples are Filipinos. Some don't have their families here, but I know damn well they're on their phones every night trying to talk to their families. Our guys that are doing work and doing overtime, it's bloody tough because, you know, it's just trying to make ends meet. And, you know, we do say a lot around the Christmas period, hey, come on, guys, you know, don't blow your budget, you know, try and keep within your means. But I really keep on saying your time, a toy, at the end of the day, for a child, I know it means a hell of a lot to you, but your time with your son and daughter means the world to them, you know. So it's putting those small aspects of coining things a little bit different so they feel as though, geez, you could be right. Actually, my time with my children is more valuable than actually trying to give them money or trying to give them a present. It's helpful, but we know that time is very precious and we just got to spend it the best way possible.
The final pillar for Mates in Construction is research. Which this really interests me. What are you learning? What have you learned this year?
What we've learned this year, and thanks to Doc Lauren, you know, we had three pieces of research. And one was when we did a lot of work with Kying Order, looking at through the survey and getting their feedback and the importance of what mates were like when we came on site, where, you know, how we were greeted. The other part was looking at mostly just looking at our vulnerable areas. So what we found through the research was people who actually are not in a relationship, 15 to 24, non-binary and mostly our rainbow community, and just looking at just how a huge impact, especially through to Manawai Take, which is basically our region from New Plymouth all the way to Gisborne. That's what the research that came out through her pieces of work. And so we know that the research is vitally important about the work that we do, but it's just, it gives us a good idea where the future of Mates needs to go to and how does that look, especially collaborating with different organisations to try and get that message across. And because it's the level of training we're trying to actually deliver across New Zealand.
It's a really big role that you have. Does it ever feel like it's too much?
No, because I think the things after the places I've been mentally myself, you know, I've always said to myself, you know, what is my legacy? What do I want to leave behind? And what do I want to spend the next 20 years of my life? Has it been worth it? Because I know for the first 30, 35, it's all been given to rugby. Now I just want to give back to our communities because, you know, our mental health, mostly organisations and systems that are out there, we don't know who they are. We just want to know who they are so that we can actually promote them, give better options to all our men and women out there that are struggling. And it's just, I love the work that I do and I'm very grateful being in this space.
Yeah, people will be listening thinking, man, is that the same Slade McFarlane that played, was it 1,500 games for North Harbour or 2,500? How many games did you play for Harbour? Ridiculous number.
I think it was 128, I think, you know, of that. And I think I ended up playing 223 first-class games and all that. And when I look back at it, I shouldn't say this, but I mean, I've made some great friends and great memories. But the thing was that it was never going to last forever. And I didn't want to go to coaching because there's only two types of coaches. There's one getting fired and one about to be fired. So that's how I saw it. And I just went into in a different direction. And when I came into this mental well-being and space, I said, this is me. This is good. And it's just giving back to community. Because, you know, even though I've come from mates, it's not about me. It's about how do we actually look after our people.
But am I right in saying you were playing club rugby at East Coast, but were you close to 50 years old when you finished playing?
Yeah, I finished at 48. I
think 48?
And that's where I said, you know, mostly rugby was my therapy. I mean, but the problem that I had was whoever pissed me off during the week and I, you know, were playing my game was because I could legally go out and hurt people. Not getting yellow cards or red cards, it was just because, you know, that was my way of dealing with it. But I was hitting the alcohol just as hard, just as after, and so it came with its own pressures and demons, and I was looking after a young family, and I didn't know how to talk. I just didn't know how to talk, and so, you know, going through most of that time and then actually having some good friends that helped me out, I don't think I'd be here if I didn't go to my therapist, and because I actually did entertain suicide because I thought it was just the easy way out, and, you know, if I had a policy, then, you know, my kids are going to be looked after, and they deserve not even having me here, you know. And so those are the kind of demons I was dealing with at the time, but I went and saw my therapist, and I've been with her for about 10 years now, so I call her my incinerator. So she's I go in with my garbage bag, I dump it, burn it, and I walk out with an empty bag and fill it up again, so... You know, I've just found ways to actually try and deal with it. And, you know, I don't get it perfect every time, but it's just a work in progress, you know. So every day's a school day.
Good for you, man. Yeah. Well, it takes courage to go to a counsellor or go to seek help. And I've done that too. I go and see someone every so often because I know I need to do that.
Yeah.
Did you ever think, though, that it was a weakness to do as opposed to the strength that we both know that it is?
100%. If you saw me when I was in my career, it was like, you're mad. You know, there's something wrong with you. You know, and there's nothing wrong with it at all. You know, it's been able to actually deal with some serious traumas that I had. You know, like I didn't realise that, you know, being sexually abused at 8 years old and as a young boy, that it was going to play a huge part, you know, raising my children. And you know, not realising that when they got to the age of eight, that I was freaking out, you know, that I'm going to be this bad... you know, I'm going to be the predator on my children. And you know, I was really battling some serious demons. And I didn't realise that kind of trauma was going to come through and actually dictate a lot about how I was dealing with stuff. And, you know, and then plus being a rugby player, oh, well, if I open my mouth up and, you know, that I was sexually abused at a young age and all that, you know, what were people going to think of me? And I said at the end of the day, I don't care what people think. I just wanted to look after my family and so they could have a really good teenage years and grow up to be, you know, full citizens of New Zealand and being good people.
So you played pretty decent standard of footy until you were 48. Is that because you loved it or were you scared to walk away from it?
I didn't have anything else to actually go to because I just didn't know what other avenues to look after, what the demons were going in my head. And so it was... Rugby was... Most should be a catalyst of something to come. So the first start was like, this is awesome, this is great, you know, I'm getting paid for doing what I'm doing. But the reality started setting in as, you know, I couldn't play that forever, but I had to find another avenue to actually start to work on my own mental well-being and how do I balance myself out, because I wasn't balanced, I tell you that much. I was all over the show. And it affected my relationship, my first relationship. I'm very lucky that I have a good relationship both with my kids and I got my current wife that, you know, and I really just put a lot more effort into actually understanding my flaws and being fully aware and having these conversations so that I can actually say that I can be the best version of myself each day. So,
yeah
it's sad that it's come a little bit later, but, you know, I'd rather do it now and the time that I have and just be the best that I can. That's all I can ask for.
I'm 47 years old, and I know you're a few years on me, but we're both from a very similar generation. I know that if I go and have a beer now with my mates or a coffee or whatever it might be, that I feel more capable to ask deeper questions than I would have been at the age of 20, 30, now, probably even 40, to be honest, Slade. Do you find that as well, that with you and your mates now, you can actually have a proper, meaningful conversation rather than the bullshit and just the banter?
Yep, 100%. I just tell it how it is. You know, what's going on? How's it all going? You know, do you need any assistance? Because, you know, it is a true catch-up, and that's when we can walk away and they feel as though they're, man, this was a different conversation than we had mostly 40 years ago, but this is what it's how important it is to actually try and, you know, make them realise they're valuable. I value you. You're important to me. You're part of my makeup of who I am, and that's how I, you know, I see you as one of those people that I grew up. But you mean the hell of a lot to me, because if you disappear or whatever happens and I didn't know, then that's a huge weight on my shoulders that, you know, I could have done something completely different. And that's exactly where people are sitting at the moment. Who have been impacted by suicide, they wish they could have done more, you know, and they wish they had known or they could have these conversations. So we're just trying to change the outcomes, which are more positive than mostly negative.
That's such a good point. That's why the ripple effects of suicide just go on and on and on and on, because you hear of someone who takes their own life, and even if you didn't know them real well or you didn't spend a lot of time with them, immediately you internalise and go, man, what more could I have done? Should I have done more? Should I have known? We all do that, don't we? And it can be tortuous.
Oh, 100%. And so I really do say when we guys, when I ask about who's been impacted, and I say, I give you permission to relinquish the pain that you have. Why? Because at the end of the day, it wasn't your decision. It was theirs. Because you know as much as I do, when these situations, we miss them. And we'd love them to be here. We think about them all the time. They could have been X, Y, and Z and the what-ifs, but they're not. So let's keep on reminding ourselves who they were when they were alive and celebrate who they are, not what they've done.
Is suicide a delicate topic for you, and how do you confront that?
No, I make it normal. It shouldn't be delicate. It should be something that, you know, when you got stats, when they say that, you know, and the World Health Organization say this, 1 in 20 have suicidal thoughts in any two-week period. 1 in 20.
5%.
Yep. And this is from a World Health Organization. This is saying world globally. You know, so the thing is that it's more common than we think. And all we're trying to do is actually normalize it so that we can actually have discussions about it. And, you know, when you're talking to your mate, you know, the realisation is that, geez, you know, if we talk about it more often, then we could save a lot more people that are in that space.
2023, this number is staggering to me. In construction, we lost about 80, mostly men, in 2023. To the best of your knowledge, what's driving that? Do you know?
Well, it's like we're all experiencing now. We're seeing a lot of restructures, you know, in the construction industry. So that pretty much tells me that, you know, people are actually losing their jobs. And because we're in a bit of a bust at the moment, especially in the construction industry, things are coming really tough, you know. And we've had COVID was one of them, and then we've had this financial crippling situation we're going through. So we're all kind of sitting on tender hooks, but, you know, really at the end of the day, it's hard to put down what they may look like, because it could be a combination of things. It could be some guys are just losing their job, and then on top of that, you know, they're breaking up with their partner. Custody of children. This is a tough time for some men coming up to Christmas. You know, so there's all these different elements that may put ourselves in a situation where those dark thoughts are rising and actually not getting to a point where we feel as though that we're actually getting heard. So it's a difficult kind of seeing what that looks like, and that's why we're trying to do a lot more awareness for our mates to look after our mates, because you guys are right there, right beside them, and hopefully we can see those sorts of changes and then have those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Have you known many men in the last 5 years since you've been with mates in construction who have sadly taken their own lives?
Too many, because we do a lot of post-ventions as well. So we have, you know, we have to go to sites that have lost workers, and the impact is quite sobering. You know, we've been to places where, you know, we've been verbally attacked, you know, who the hell are you guys, you know, why the hell are you here if they don't know who we are? And when we actually start to talk about why we're here to support them, the mood changes. But, you know, the, I don't wish it upon anybody, but, you know, a lot of our field officers have to go to places and have to sit down and hear how these people have actually taken their lives. It's quite tough for them. And so that's the reason why we do a lot of work internally, that we're making sure that we're getting our counselling as well. So it's just something that, you know, it's part of the deal. And I think as bad as it sounds, you know, at the end of the day, we can't save everybody. But I'm damn well going to give a good go the ones that we can.
It certainly sounds like you're giving it a crack. And I extrapolate things out and go, okay, so we lost 82 suicide last year. That doesn't factor in the number of people that may have tried to take their own lives. And then you go beyond that to the people who are legitimately thinking about ending their own lives, to the people who are struggling with anxiety and depression, to the people who are suffering from burnout. And that is just a mental well-being disaster.
Yep.
Am I overstating it?
Nah, you're not overstating, Chief. You know, that's the reality we're dealing with, you know, and everybody, you know, on this planet, or especially in NZ, we've all got certain traumas that will affect us. And, you know, like we always say to our workers, you know, you'll be working and it could just take one phone call and they could change the whole outcome of the day. And that's the minefield that we're working in, and we just want to be amongst that so that we can actually say, hey, you know, at least these guys are trying something and might give it a go, you know. It's a tough one, you know, because I'd love to walk around the sites and be available to them, but, you know, we just want to make them feel as though they've got the courage to actually ask for help. So
do you get met with resistance? Does the industry, have you got the backing from the construction industry in New Zealand?
100%. You know, so right. We're industry funded, so we do still have to go for funding from the government. But you know, with a bust that the things are going at the moment, you know, what do businesses do? They're going to let something go, to just survive. So we're seeing that in the horizons, but, you know, hopefully we go back into a boom, you know, that can change again, you know. So, you know, we're seeing our workers under pressure. We always know that Christmas, you know, someone wants something done before we go on a break, and those pressures are real. So we just really need to, hopefully we have continuous funding mostly from the government, or, you know, we get the opportunities where new companies come on board and we can keep on sending the message out to support our men and women in our industry.
You've mentioned the importance of looking after yourself, Slade, to be the best version that you can be, to then be the best available support for so many people. What's that for you? How do you look after yourself?
I'm very lucky that, you know, I have a great relationship with my kids and my family and my wife. We have these, you know, discussions. We spend, you know, 20 minutes each night just having a talk and just reconnecting. I do wind therapy. It's actually called a Harley Davidson, really. It's being on a motorbike can actually...
wind therapy.
Wind therapy. That's what they call it. But it's the one time when I'm riding that, you know, I am thinking about myself, one, because I want to ride the best way possible and come home in one piece, you know. And so when I ride, I'm only thinking about myself. I'm trying to make sure that, I'm giving back to myself, and just the enjoyment of being on two wheels and being in some places and some good company as well. But just... gratefulness more than anything. I'm really working on the gratefulness of the things that I have, and, you know, and that, you know, there is someone else out there that's actually worse off than I am, and I'm just be more appreciative that the mere fact that, you know, I've got a job, I'm doing something that I really love doing, and just getting out in our communities and trying to help as much as possible. So that whole giving back, you know, because once upon a time I was an entertainer, and that's on the rugby field. But now I'm giving back to the communities that we can try and, you know, really help in a space where our men find it quite difficult to talk about.
What are you most hopeful for?
That we can reduce the numbers here in NZ. I hope more people can actually open up and actually have really good conversations with their best mates, and look after the people that they actually work with. So that's the an outcome that I'd love to walk away knowing that, you know, we've left construction in a better industry, better space, that they can actually openly talk honest with each other.
Just like you and I have today.
Yeah, 100%, brother.
Thank you so much, Slade. Keep up the great work, man, and really appreciate everything that you're doing.
Well, same to you, Ken. I love what you're doing. You know, it's about empowering our people, and you know, it would never happen with people like yourself.
Take It From Us is produced by Karen Murphy. Our sound engineer is Paul Hannon from Planet FM, and I'm your host, Kent Johns. Please get in touch with us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to Take It From Us. My story, your story, our story.
We can lay under the sun, like it's your idea of fun. Let it glisten on your skin, sun-kissed melanin. Bomb.